Hello and welcome to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Delphine Crescenzo and I'm so happy to be joined in the studios of KBOO by local historian and author Stephen Hanks. Stephen is truly passionate about history. In 2013, he published The Aki Tree about his family's history and genealogy. A few years ago, he started researching the local stories of early Portland African-American pioneers and created walking tours to share with the public his incredible findings about Portland's early racial dynamics. For years now, he's also heard stories from his 86-year-old father about his memories of several historic jazz clubs that were around in Portland during the 40s, 50s, and 60s in a neighborhood called Albina. The city has since bulldozed the jazz clubs down to build the freeway I-5 and the Sports Coliseum. Many residents were forced to move and many lost their homes. Stephen's dream is to hold a jazz festival to pay tribute to the Albina neighborhood and preserve its jazz musical history. He's offering a walking historical tour of the neighborhood, but him and his wife, Lisa Daskalos Hanks, are now also organizing the first Albina Jazz Festival coming up this summer, August 12th and 13th, 2017, at Lilis Albina Park. Stephen Hanks joins us to discuss the upcoming jazz festival, but also to share his passion for history and discuss pioneers of color in Portland. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you for having me, and thank you so much for all your zeal and interest in history as well, and KBOO. I want to thank KBOO also, so thank you for having me.
Yeah, and actually that's exactly where I want to start is with history, your passion for history. Where does that come from?
Wow, you know, that's a good question. I would say that probably my mother probably passed that on to me when we were growing up. She used to have a library of books over by the fireplace in our house and over in North Portland on North Alaska Street. And I used to always just go over there and just would be pulling books out. Even if I couldn't read them, I would just look through the different, there were atlases, there were spelling books, there were, picture books. So I definitely want to say my mother put that interest in me. And when I'd go to the library, even in grade school, we went to a private school for about 5 years, and public school after that, Portsmouth, and then Wilson High School. But I was always sticking my head in a library. Mm-hmm. You couldn't ever get me out of a library. I would just love going into the library. I can remember there was a library on North Lombard Street over in North Portland, and just getting after work, or going after school, I should say. Instead of going home, I'd go to the library. Mm-hmm. And just so, yeah, definitely, I'd say my mom. And she actually is no longer with us physically. She's doing well. She's passed on. But 3 years to today. Mm-hmm. Today.
Wow.
Yeah, April 14th. So she's very dear to us. Fern McCoy Hanks. And she came out here in 1945 from St. Louis, Missouri. And she came out here with her parents. They were looking for work, part of the migration here, and they came to work at the shipyards there. And they used to live right on the corner of Northeast Morris and Northeast Union, you know, Union Avenue, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard. But back in the day, it was Northeast Union, right across the street from the Kino store. And she would walk down to Dawson Park there. And mom she was a great person. So,
yeah. It's great that we can talk about her today.
Yes.
And you just share this amazing story about her and how her and her folks came here. How about genealogy? How did you start really delving into your genealogy to the point you wrote a whole book about it?
Yes, I did. And that was quite interesting as well. I can remember to the day how I got that interest. I was over at my folks' house in 1989 summer, And my father and I, we were watching a baseball game together. And I was probably 20 years old, 20, 21, something like that there. So he pulled out a letter that he got in the mail from one of his cousins back in Manhattan, Kansas, my dad's hometown. And he handed it to me, says, "There's something I want you to read." And so I opened up the envelope, and there was a little obituary inside of his cousin, who was his name was Mert Hanks Jr., and he was the first African American mayor of Manhattan, Kansas.
Wow.
He had passed away, unfortunately, of a heart attack. And so there was this obituary, and I started reading this, and never had heard about many people on my dad's side of the family. I can remember as a kid, like I said, Mom would keep this library over by the fireplace in our house, and Dad would keep some of his high school yearbooks over there. And so I would kind of skim through those, and you know, but not too much about his side of the family. So as I'm reading this obituary, all these names that I had never heard of before, you know, all these cousins and, you know, aunts and so forth. So right there, that got my interest. I said, I want to know more about my roots. And so that's where it started right there. And started interviewing my father. And, you know, he didn't know too much about his family, to be honest with you. He told me a little bit. He told me that his grandmother on his father's side, she was an ex-slave. And she shared the same bedroom with my dad in Manhattan. When he was 10 years old, she died in 1940. But he remembers her. Her name was Rosetta Hanks. And he had a picture of her, a photograph of her. I don't know when it was taken, but it was up in the closet with all the photographs. And so that just, man, I was just on cloud nine that day. Just so right there, I just couldn't get enough of wanting to dig deeper and deeper. And so that's where it began there, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then how about the history of Portland and the history of African-American pioneers to the city? How did you get that interest started?
Oh, that was something else, too. And that just kind of came just, you know, out of the blue, just spontaneous. I was working at the school district and working in the clerk's archives department down in their basement. And going through all the old records of Portland and the Portland school district and the students and so forth. And just learning all this information about the history of Portland. I mean, they got student records going all the way back to the 1890s and so forth. And I got, there was one booklet in the school district at that time. This was probably about 3 years ago. And it was a book that someone had wrote. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the person. But she wrote a book about the history of the Portland School District and the African-American community back in the 1870s, and how the Portland School District was basically a segregated district at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They would not allow people of color to be students. And there was an effort that went forth back in that time, 1867. There was a gentleman by the name of William Brown. He was an African-American, one of the early pioneers in the city of Portland. He lived downtown where the black community was at that time in the downtown area. It wasn't over in where it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was reading this book and just getting mesmerized, and I just started thinking. And then there was information about Vanport and some of the students that were affected by the Vanport flood. That was very interesting, seeing these photographs that somebody had donated to the school district. And some of them were faded and they had a little bit of ruination due to the water and
right.
so forth. But I just looking at these students, and I got to thinking, wow, I want to start looking through the old yearbooks of these high school yearbooks. I want to go back to like the 1920s and see how many African-American students I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my little project that I started right then. And I just started going through Franklin, Benson, Washington. What else did I find? Lincoln. And just, you know, whenever I would go all the way. Of course, at that time, they only would show the photographs of the seniors.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't show juniors, freshmen, or sophomore. But I would just go through them. And every time I would find an African-American senior graduate,
mm-hmm.
I would write it down. What year? What what the name of the school. And pretty soon I had a list, and I said, this is 1920s of all these wonderful people of color going to the high schools. I could not believe it that no one had ever told me this before. And I'm sure the information had been out there, but I had never, you know, bothered to look into it. And so that got my interest right there. And then I got to thinking, well, how far back can I go as far as the African-American community in the city of Portland? When did African-Americans first start coming to Portland, not just Oregon? Because I knew the history about Oregon and the exclusion laws and so forth, and how African-Americans were barred from living in the state. But I wanted to know, what about the city of Portland? When did the first African-Americans set foot in the city? And how did the community develop? Mm-hmm. And that's what got my interest in the, you know, trying to put together a walking tour, mm-hmm. just going through the Oregonian newspapers online, just looking up any type of story that had to do with Negro or colored or, you know, any type of way that I could get a storyline going. And I would make a photocopy of it, put it in my catalog, and pretty soon I had all kinds of even the phone books, the city directories, right. at that time, because many of the African Americans would advertise their skills, mm-hmm. in the directories, you know, whether if they were, you know, barbershop or cook or just amazing different things. Even some that were involved in having boarding rooms. And so that's what got my interest, just working there in that archives down in the school district.
Wow. And so talk a little bit about the tours that you have of downtown, and what are some of, like, the biggest discoveries for you?
So many interesting discoveries. And what's so well, I will say the sad part first, but the good part last. The sad part is that there's hardly any buildings left to show.
Right.
There's not any structures still standing. Many of them have been torn down, or they just fell apart to disarray and so forth. So you don't have too much of that when you go on the tour. You can't really look at a building and say, well, this building was here back originally. Mm. But you can find the location. And that's what I find interesting. At least you could go to the location. You could go to the corner of 5th and Cooch and say, you know, on this corner was Reuben Crawford, you know, came here from St. Louis, Missouri with his 8 children and wife. You know, they were slaves and they were given their freedom, and they came all the way out to the west, to Oregon. And this is the corner that they lived at, and this, mm-hmm. was the address that they lived at. That's just phenomenal to me. And so there's different things like that on the tour that you can, you know, that as you come along on the tour, we'll go to different corners, different addresses, and we've checked these addresses based on the old directories at the Portland Library, Multnomah County Library. So we're pretty certain that these were the locations where many of these people lived at or worked at. And so some of the interesting stories I've learned through that tour is, as I mentioned, about William Brown and his fight for integrating the schools. Yes, equal opportunity in the school district. That was a wonderful story there. There's another story of a man who was a millionaire that lived in downtown Portland and was African American back in the 1870s.
Mm-hmm.
It just is amazing. This man was a millionaire living downtown. He had a saloon. He was the owner of a saloon on the corner of Morrison and Second. And the name of his saloon was called the Cornucopia.
Oh, yeah.
The Cornucopia. You remember that? You came on the tour.
I do remember
you came
now.
On. Yes, you've been on several of my tours, and I'm glad to have you and your coworkers along as well. So that was just an interesting story that I really enjoyed learning about, is how this man was able to acquire vast amounts of wealth. He could go into a bank, write a check for $50,000, and they would honor it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
One of my favorite stories was that I believe the lady's name was Mary, who owned the boarding room.
Oh, yeah, Mary Carr, yes. And somehow she's related to the gentleman I was just mentioning about, who was the millionaire. His name was Alfred Carr.
Mm-hmm.
And her name was Mary Carr, as you mentioned, who had the boarding house there. And I could not find out whether if they were husband and wife and maybe they had gotten separated or divorced. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell. But the fact that they both had the same last name, of course, that in itself is not anything. But the fact that they later on, I was able to learn a very interesting story, too, about an association that was formed in 1869, and it was called the Working Men's Joint Stock Association. And just an amazing story. And Alfred Carr was a member, Mary Carr was a member,
right,
and several others. And they were out buying real estate. They were out buying land. And they went so far as even Tacoma and Seattle, Washington, to buy prime real estate back in that 1869-70. Just floors me to hear about this. And, of course, these are stories that none of us heard about when we went to middle school or, you know, let alone high school. We never heard about the African-American pioneers.
Right.
And so that's why I wanted to, you know. And I'm sure there's many, many more stories that I haven't even heard about. But so we're always looking for more. But,
yeah
Mary Carr was a wonderful story about the boarding house there. And right there underneath the Burnside Bridge there on Cooch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how about the Albina neighborhood? You recently also starting a tour there. And would you share a little bit with us about what's the history of the Albina neighborhood?
Well, the Albina neighborhood goes back to, it became a city in 1891. It was actually not incorporated with the city of Portland at that time. It was its own city, I found out. Yeah. So you had like three cities. Back in the 1890s, you had, or 1880s, prior to 1891, I should say, you had the downtown Portland area. That was a city. You had Albina, which was a city of its own. And then you had Southeast Portland, which I think they, what did they call that? I can't remember the term that they called that, but it was three cities.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Albina was incorporated into Portland in 1891. But it was an immigrant city. You had many people from, you know, Germany, the Mediterranean, Irish, Greeks there, like my wife's family, they were Greek. They lived in the area, her grandparents, that is. You had many, many different immigrants there. And, of course, as I said, the African-American community was in downtown Portland. But as the railroad started to come in, and you mentioned about the porters working on the railroad, by 1910, the African-American community started to get pushed out of downtown, and they started to cross the river over into Northeast Portland, which was Albina at that time. And so many of them started moving over to Albina. This was before Vanport was even built. Vanport was built in 1942.
Right.
So this was before that. And so even during the 1920s, you had a small African-American community growing there. And that was called Albina. Thank you.
You are listening to Charlie Parker, Billy's Bounce on KBOO Portland. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. On Friday, April 14th, I got to interview Stephen Hanks, local historian and author, about the first Albina Jazz Festival coming up this summer, August 12th and 13th at Lillis Albina Park. Stephen joined me to discuss the upcoming jazz festival, but also to share his passion for history and discuss pioneers of color in Portland. And so share a little bit about the influence of jazz on Albina, but also on your parents or your father, and also on yourself.
Wow. The influence of jazz on me, my father definitely, I would say, is the one that influenced us, me and my two other brothers growing up. Every Saturday, you know. Without a doubt, we'd wake up to hearing jazz music in the living room, you know, emanating out of the living room and right into our bedrooms. And Saturday morning, I mean, Dad would be playing it all, you know, and he'd have the old reel-to-reel tapes back in the day and his records, his LPs. And he had a really good collection of 45s. I can remember as a kid, you know, listening to some of his records, because at that time I didn't go out and buy my own records. I'd listen to Dad, so he'd have Charlie Parker, he'd have all these different little 45s, and I would just play them over and over and over. And so I know that Dad, he just had a love for jazz music. And so later, as we got into our teenage years, he would like to go to the jazz festivals that were that were going on in the area. There was one festival that they would take us to way down to almost in Newport, Oregon, down on the beach. And it was called the Otter Crest, Oregon. And they'd have a little jazz festival there every year. And it was called the Otter Crest Jazz Festival. And I can remember him taking us there when I was probably a junior in high school at the time. And then, of course, the Mount Hood Jazz Festival that was going on for many years out at Mount Hood Community College campus there. I think they had that going on for maybe 20 years. And I went there a few times with my folks, my mom and dad. And so, yeah, he was a great influence of jazz on me, and mom as well. So when I heard about jazz through my dad, he would tell me about how when he was in the Navy, he got stationed out here in Oregon. And he was stationed in Astoria, way down at the coast by Columbia River. So on his weekends, when he had time to himself, him and some other of his Navy buddies, they would hop into a car. One of them had a car. I don't know how they got it, but one of them had a car. And they would drive to Portland on the weekends. And some, not all of them were going to hear jazz. Some were going to do this, do that, maybe the Rose Parade, you know. So everybody would come to Portland, and then everybody would jump out of the car and go their own ways. And then they would meet back up later on Sunday to go back to base. But Dad would make his way over to where the jazz clubs were on Williams Avenue. And this was in 1952. And he'd go over to some of the clubs that were over by where the Memorial Coliseum and the Moda Center is now. He would tell me about, you know, how he would spend time over there going to McClendon's Rhythm Room or Little Sandy's, and just had a blast. He just had a great time listening to that. And he would do that whenever he got the chance to come to Portland. Yeah. So jazz started growing in the Albina area. I think jazz, you know, because I asked myself this question the other day, when did jazz first come to Portland? And it probably came in the form of ragtime, you know, in the 1880s, 1890s. I know that I learned during the walking tours that there were African-American piano players that would play at some of the bars in downtown during the 1880s. I read some documents somewhere, and I can't tell you where it is, but it mentioned that there were 8 African-American pianists that were playing at 8 different locations in downtown Portland. So no doubt ragtime was very popular in the 1880s, 1890s. And of course, you have an amalgam of ragtime and then your blues and then the jazz. And it just kind of formed together. And there were other African-American saloons that were in downtown Portland, in the Chinatown area, as they call it. During 1900, there was a saloon called the Arcadia. There was another one called the Monogram. And that's where folks would get together, as well as in private homes. Mm-hmm. You know, many times they'd get together in private homes and, you know, private clubs or whatnot. And they would play this amalgam of ragtime and blues. And that started to become your jazz. But when the migration came in the 1940s during World War II, we know many African Americans started coming out to Portland looking for work. And that's why my mother and her folks, why they came out here. And so many of them moved to Vanport City, which was built in 1942 until the flood wiped them away in 1948 on Memorial Day. And my mom has a very interesting story about that. I'll tell you later. But after the flood, many of the folks in Vanport moved over to Portland. But many of them brought their music with them. For example, the porters who worked on the railroad, they were traveling all across the United States. Right. They'd be going to Chicago, New York, L.A., and they were getting the latest information, the latest news, and they were also getting the latest music, the latest jazz that was going on. And at that time, bebop music was the hottest thing in jazz. Bebop was the thing going on. And you had people like, you know, Charlie Parker. You had Dizzy Gillespie. You had Thelonious Monk, Duke Ellington, Count Basie. They were the hottest thing going on, bebop. I can remember my dad, he has an album at home of all these little newspaper clippings that he would take, cut out of the newspaper. And a lot of them had to deal with, you know, the bebop and of the day. So that was hot going on. That was the hottest music going on. So when the porters would come back to Portland, they would be bringing their music with them, the LPs, the little 45s, and they would. There was a music store over on Broadway and Williams. It was called Madrona Records, and you could go in there and you could buy the latest jazz. And so this music, this jazz form of bebop, started to become very special in the Alpina area. And of course, after the flood, many of the African-Americans who were now looking for new homes, they came over to Albina from Vanport, and new clubs started springing up right around mid-40s, 1945 on, and especially in the 50s too. So music really hit modern jazz, I should say, because there was jazz in Oregon, jazz in Portland prior to 1940s. You had your Dixieland jazz. You had your orchestra jazz or swing jazz, and that was being played all around in different areas in Portland. You had it over in Jansen Beach area. You had it over in the Southwest Portland, Barber Boulevard. You had it over in where were the Oaks Park area. So they had a lot of jazz going on. But the modern jazz, the bebop, really was brought into Portland from the residents of Vanport that were lost their homes due to the flood. Yes.
And so you shared how your mom's family came, but then you said your dad had come through Oregon when he was in the Navy. So how did he come back? Was that experience and the jazz scene any influence in him coming back, or was that not at all connected?
Yeah, he was tracking jazz when he was in the Navy. He got out of high school in 1948. He graduated in Manhattan College there, Manhattan High School, I should say. And he went right into the service right after high school. He was into baseball a lot. He was, you know, everybody was following Jackie Robinson, you know. He was, you know, everybody wanted to be like Jackie Robinson. You know, he broke the racial barrier by being the first African American in baseball. And so everybody wanted to be like him. And so my dad, he had a love for baseball, and he probably would have wanted to have gone pro if he could have. But so you had baseball on one side, and then you had the jazz on the other, the bebop. And I should say, too, the ragtime in his hometown. There was a lot of clubs that would play the doo-wop, you know, type of blues. His aunt, I guess, was a boogie-woogie vocalist singer, and she would sing in the clubs and well as play piano. So Dad had that little bit of influence early on, him and his older brother, Billy, growing up there. And so they had that little boogie-woogie thing going on. And so, like I said, when he got out of high school, he joined the Navy, and he went to Guam, Pacific Islands. So he was out there for a minute, and then they sent him to Chicago. He was supposed to be stationed in Oakland, California, but I guess when he was on leave, he got in a car accident. He broke his wrist, so they sent him to Chicago Hospital to get mended up. And instead of sending him to Oakland, or I should say San Francisco, they sent him to Astoria. So that's how he came to Oregon. So he had that music in him when he came out here. And so that's how the connection. Then he stayed. Yeah. When he got out in 52, he stayed. He just liked Portland so well. And the African-American community was already based in Portland. So he just moved up to Portland, got us his own place on Northeast 7th there. And then, of course, he met my mother, Fern McCoy, about 5 or 6 years later. They were both working at the VA hospital, the Veterans Administration, and struck up a friendship there. And and the rest is history as far as us later.
Okay, so let's get back to the Albana Jazz Festival. What do you think that festival is going to bring to Portland?
Well, we're hoping that it will bring back the recreation of what it was like during the 40s and 50s and 60s if you were able to go back in time and live in Albina neighborhood during those three decades. You'd hear music all throughout the night till 4 a.m. You'd have Williams Avenue was like what Northwest 23rd Avenue is today. Just full of traffic, people walking on both sides of the street, people dressed up, dressed nice, you know, dresses, brim hats, and you'd have music just going on. You'd hear music in people's backyards even, you know, and as well as the clubs. So we kind of were hoping that we could bring that back, you know, a little recreation of it. We wish we could bring the properties back. Unfortunately, we can't do that, but we can at least bring the music back. And, you know, music brings people together. Music brings back good memories, good times. And so we're hoping that we can do something to at least pay tribute to that era of Portland, because this is the city of Portland's history.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
I would like to just say, too, that when people hear the word Albina, Albina and the black community are synonymous. And it has a long history. And this neighborhood, like I said, goes all the way back to the 20s when the African-American community started crossing the river from downtown Portland over to over by the Broadway Bridge all the way up Russell Street, even up to Fremont Street, and then eventually branching out over to Union. So we have the Albina District. And the Albina District actually really goes all the way down to the Columbia River, Columbia Boulevard. We have Killingsworth, Alberta Street. So Albina District is wide. But the Albina neighborhood is what was so impacted by what happened due to the urban renewal, quote unquote, that came in. And just to give you a little history about that, in 1955, there was what was called the Exposition Recreation Commission, or the ER Commission, and they were looking for a location to build a sports coliseum for the city. And there were many places that they were looking at to build this site. They looked at Oaks Park. They looked at Inverness. They looked at the Rose City Golf Course. They looked at Delta Park even. And even there was an area downtown Portland over, I think it was Front Avenue and Market Street. They were looking at possibly building that sports coliseum there by where the Keller Auditorium is. So there was a lot of sites on the list there. But their first choice was actually Delta Park. It's really where they wanted to build the Memorial Coliseum. They really wanted to build it in Delta Park. But what happened was and I don't want to get too much into the politics of it because there's just so much going on back at that time. But basically, the ER Commission couldn't get land title to Delta Park due to the city council and the mechanisms that were going on at that time. So instead, they heard that if it was suggested to the ER Commission that they could get increased funding if they had a federally approved urban renewal program. And so if an urban renewal project received federal approval, then the city could get more funds and they could clear the quote-unquote blighted area and be able to resell the land to the ER Commission. And so guess which site got selected? Well, it was Albina. And I have in my hand here this little report that was made in July 1955. It's called the Quality of Housing Report, Broadway Steel Bridge Area. And it says for the Mayor's Committee on Urban Renewal. And the mayor at that time was a man by the name of Fred L. Peterson. He was a very, he was a good mayor, doing what he needed to do to improve the city of Portland. But it says here that at the request of the Mayor's Committee on Urban Renewal, they surveyed the Broadway Steel Bridge area as shown. And there were 530 dwelling and rooming units that were considered substandard. And if you go on to read more of this report, it basically just says that one of the requirements for federal aid in clearing a, quote, blighted area, fancy word of saying people of color who have been denied access to better jobs, better housing. Basically, we know what the word investment means. Well, this was a de-investment of Albina neighborhood. And you also had the redlining real estate laws that were going against African-Americans at that time. You have to keep in mind there was also hard to get loans from the banks at that time. So there was a lot of tough hills to climb for African-Americans at that time. And so it created a blighted area. So anyway, the mayor did this survey, and instead of picking Delta Park or Inverness or Oaks Park, whatever, they picked Albina. And so, many homes were uprooted. And then later on, the Interstate Freeway project came, and that also tore out another part of the heart of Albina. And so basically it was just getting out the heart of the African-American community at that time. And so many families had to relocate, and many of them went further up to Upper Albina, which is up toward Russell, Fremont, further on down Union, over to 15th Avenue, and so forth. But the jazz clubs were torn down, historic jazz clubs. I mean, we had major names that came out here. We had Oscar Peterson. We had Duke Ellington, Count Basie. We had Sammy Davis Jr. He came out here many, many times. The list goes on of different ones. Billie Holiday came out here. Art Tatum. I mean, the list, there's many names.
And none of that.
Those are just the big people. And then you have the local entertainers who were here, like Warren Bracken, Bobby Bradford, Cleve Williams, many of them are gone now. Sweet Baby James Benton, he was a wonderful singer. They were part of the original Cats Club band. And many of them, I think the only one that maybe is still living is Mr. Bobby Bradford. He was a trumpet player. And we went over to go visit him last month. And I went to grade school with his two sons, Dennis and Billy Bradford. And, of course, Dennis Bradford, as many people know, he was a drummer to a very wonderful jazz fusion band called the Jeff Lorber Fusion back during the 80s and 90s. And so we went to, you know, school together, and I remember coming home from school and stopping at the Bradford home, and I'd see Dennis. He'd just be playing his his drum set. You know, he'd be playing an album by a band called Cold Sweat, and he would just be, you know, playing the drums exactly on the note to the album. But anyway, his father, Bobby Bradford, I believe, may be the only one left of that original era of musicians who played on Williams Avenue. So we contacted him and told him about the club, about the festival, I should say. He was very excited about it. We're hoping that we can have him there. If not able to play, just to be able to interview him, or just for him to be able to just stand up on stage and give a shout out. And we wish that we could do that to many others, but so many of them have passed away, you know. So, but there was also, I should say, many of the older ones of musicians that have passed, they were able to share their skills to the next generation, like Mel Brown, mm-hmm. Ron Steen, many other ones that are still alive. And so there is that second generation that's still making the music play. And there's been so many jazz clubs that we've lost over the years also. The Jazz Quarry, Jazz the Opus, Jimmy Max, that just closed up just January of this year. And then Mr. Mack just recently passed away. The Hobbit on Southeast 39th. So we're just losing so many different clubs, LVs, Ivories. But there's a few that are just hanging around. Soli's on 18th and Alberta Street is doing a really wonderful job. And so we hope that we can have a part of that too. So we hope that we can just get our first year going, and then we can see if we can maybe have this an annual thing. But we really want to get this going. We're going to make it happen no matter what.
You are listening to Jeff Lorber Fusion, Swing Funk, on KBOO Portland. On Friday, April 14th, I got to interview Stephen Hanks, local historian and author, about the first Albina Jazz Festival coming up this summer, August 12th and 13th at Lillis Albina Park. Stephen joined me to discuss the upcoming jazz festival, but also to share his passion for history and discuss pioneers of color in Portland. So would you share a little bit about the dates for the festival and what are the plans?
Yeah, the dates are going to be August 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday of this year. August is a wonderful time of year, beautiful weather, we're hoping. And so we have those dates set in Lillis Albina Park, which is right across from Emmanuel Hospital. And so, yeah, we have some artists that have agreed to perform there. We're looking for some others, and so we hope that we can get this all together. We have some of the ones that we have booked already that have confirmed. We have Ron Steen, who is a wonderful drummer, well known, been around back to the early times of Albina. He grew up in the Albina neighborhood, wow. So he remembers seeing a lot of the older musicians who were really the pioneers. So we have him that's going to play for us. We have Devin Phillips, a phenomenal saxophone player who came out here from New Orleans, Louisiana, during the Hurricane Katrina, was displaced because of that, and he ended up in Portland. And so we're blessed to have him here. And then we have the Kirk Green Band. Kirk Green, a wonderful jazz organist. And rhythm and blues organist, I might say, too. And also a former high school friend of mine. We went to high school together back at Wilson. So we're happy to have him. And then we're also going to have Lloyd Allen, a legendary blues guitarist. He was born the same year as my dad, 1930. So that tells you how old he is. But yet when you listen to him play, he just breaks it out. I mean, he just gets that electric guitar going, and he's the master of that blues. So we have those ones there, and we're looking for a few more. So
Yeah, and for folks, if you want more details, the website is albinajazzfestival.com. So would you also share a little bit if people wanted to hook up with you on the walking tours?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. It's called Portland Pioneers of Color, and you don't have to be a member of Facebook to get to it. You could Google it, and it will pop up. You can also send an email to us at Portland Pioneers of Color Tours at yahoo.com, and just let us know. We try to post our tours on our Facebook page. Because of the weather, we haven't done it since last summer. So we're hoping to get that going again soon. But Portland Pioneers of Color has also been one of our presenters of the Albina Jazz Festival. So we kind of been holding off on the tours for a little minute because we're trying to work so hard in getting this festival together. But Right. But we're going to get those tours going pretty soon. And so please, shoot an email to Portland Pioneers of Color Tours at Yahoo. Or go to our Facebook page.
Yeah. In those, obviously we've just been spending, I don't know how long, talking about history. History is very important to me. It's very important to you. I mean, for me, it's more than a passion. Yes. And in those, difficult times, especially extreme political division, sometimes I struggle when people say that history is not relevant and not important. So I was wondering if you had some wisdom. What do you say to these folks?
Wow, that history is not relevant?
Yeah, the folks who don't want to look.
Well, yeah, no, it is, I guess when people think of the word history, some people are not into, because it requires research or reading or looking up. We live in an age where everything is just quick, you got to have it instantly, right? Like microwave, digital, click of the mouse, internet, everything is, at your fingertips. So a lot of folks don't like to do the research or the history or the reading of it. But if you present history to them in a way that makes it entertaining or makes it that their interest is piqued a little bit, that's what I like to do, try to do anyway, is, let people know that history is very vital because it tells you where you came from. History has a lot to do with what is in the present, especially when it comes to history of, you could just take any topic here in Portland, housing or jazz clubs or education, the history of all any of those things in Portland, the way they are now, like, for example, gentrification, very huge topic in the Portland area, not just in Northeast Portland, but over in Southeast Foster Road, over in the Lentz area. There's a lot of things going on as far as gentrification. Look at the homeless situation going on now. All of that goes back to our history of what things that were done before is what is going on now. So I always tell people, you don't know, you can't really understand the present without knowing the past, and you really can't understand your future without the past. You know where you're going. Mm-hmm. And just who you are as a person, just your roots, who are the people that came before you, your grandparents, your great-grandparents. Many of us don't even know who our great-grandparents were. They weren't even alive probably when we were born. But they were the ones who had to go through the struggles to bring about our grandparents, who in turn brought our parents, in turn brought us. So history is so very, very important, I say. Yes.
Thank you for that. So finally, would you share with folks who are interested in supporting also the Albina Jazz Festival and this very vital, important part of Portland history, how could they support?
They can support us with their a nice, generous donation. Just a small donation would greatly help us. There's been many that have been donating to us, and we truly appreciate that. We have a GoFundMe page where if you go to our website and you click on our donate button, that will send people to that link. And so if you'd like to just give a small donation, it doesn't have to be crazy. Just every little bit helps. This is a grassroots thing that we're doing, and we have a few grants that we've applied for that are still pending, and we're hoping that will help us as well. But we also want this to be the people's festival. So we want people to be a part of this. If you would like to earmark your donation to maybe go toward a musician, or you'd like to earmark it to go toward the stage and the sound, or you'd like to earmark it to go to another part of the festival, the advertising or whatever, earmark it and let us know. You could go to our website and we'll have the information there where you can make a nice donation there and show your support. We hope you will, and we appreciate and thank you so much for many of you who have. Truly, we do appreciate.
And so the website is albinajazzfestival.com.
So please help us out and go to our website. Give us a nice, generous support in any way you can, donation-wise. And we're going to have a fun time when August 12th comes.
Yeah.
And you come too.
Yeah, I will definitely be there.
Yeah, I want to just share this too before we, I don't want to forget this, but I found a picture in the Oregonian. This is a picture of my mom. Mm. It's kind of a photocopy, so it's not really that clear, but that's my mom there. This is before she married my dad. But this is the mayor of Portland at that time, Mayor Fred Peterson. And this article was in the Oregonian newspaper dated May 8th, 1956. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad got married the next year. But anyway, the article is about the VA awards the mayor was handing out to six persons that worked in the VA administration for outstanding performance. And so my mother was listed as one of them, Fern McCoy. And I just thought that was amazing because I never knew about this. I never knew this even existed. I don't remember mom ever mentioning about this at all. So the next time I go over to my dad's, I'm going to be going through them photographs and all of that paperwork. I got to find the original photograph and even the plaque if I can find that. If if I can't find it there, maybe Oregon Historical Society maybe might have it, or maybe even the Oregonian might have it. But this was just something I just found out just this week. Mm-hmm. I was just Googling on the Multnomah County Library's website, and I just said, let me just put in my mom's name just to see if there's something. And boom, this photograph showed up. I showed it to my brother yesterday. I ran it to him, and he couldn't believe it either. Mm-hmm. So there you go. But there were so many clubs over there. You had McClendon's Rhythm. You had the ASM. You had the Frat Hall, Savoy, Keystone Cafe, and Lil Sandy's, and of course, Paul's Paradise over on Russell Street, and many others.
Yeah, so hopefully all of those will come back to life on August 12th and 13th.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for coming.
Thank you, Delphine.
Here today and sharing all of this amazing history that you have found somewhat on your own.
Yeah.
which I find amazing.
Yeah, and there's a lot out there on the internet. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful people that have been dedicated to keep this a legacy documented, and so you could Google a lot of this up. And but yeah, I'm just blessed to be able to learn about it, and I hope we can have some fun, and you know, and
yeah, you just share it in very creative ways, a festival and walking tours. It's pretty awesome. So thanks, Stephen, so much for making
for your support,
this definitely. Important history also very much available to us. You are listening to Charlie Parker, Now's the Time, on KBOO Portland. Thank you so much for listening to KBOO. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. Stay tuned.